Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Monica Leal welcoming you to the LL Research radio program, In the Now, with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, June 22nd, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research, and her husband, Jim McCarty, who is part three of the three-part channeling team that brought us the Law of One. We have much to be grateful for both Carla and Jim for their dedicated service. Please visit the LL Research websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I will be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. 595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Leal, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Hi, Carla and Jim. How are you doing today?
Hey, hey.
Hey, we're doing well.
Okay. any quick announcements or anything you want to share before we get started?
Let's see. Jim has a new number for his trailer.
Number for his trailer?
Department of Transportation requires numbers. I discovered by being pulled over by a policeman to let me know that. So I've gone backward. I got a license plate number and a Department of Transportation number and now a vehicle identification number. So I've got all kinds of numbers that I didn't have before.
Have you figured out the numerological significance of those numbers?
No, I'm still working on that. I'm sure it's a mystery of the universe that's yet to be plumbed.
I'm sure there's something to that. So, okay. How about you, Carla? How are you doing? Did you get any new numbers today?
Well, I got a lot of encouragement from a new lady that came by this afternoon from the Visiting Nurse Association and said that we had been picked up by Medicare to be paid for, that this new, it's sort of a vacuum thing that they put on this open wound on my back, on this lumbar difficulty that I've been having, is showing good signs and, shrinking. And so now Jim and I now do not have to hawk our house in order to get me out of this.
Oh, that's good news.
Whee!
Wow.
And I've just enjoyed this last week so much. I've been able to go out and see the landscape for the first time in a while and smell the air and, that wonderful smell of onion grass that you get when you cut grass in the spring. It doesn't smell good in and of itself, but it's just because it evokes that knowledge that here's summer, hello summer. And I've been getting that walking around in the neighborhood.
Oh, that's good. I'm so glad to hear that because I love the smell of fresh cut grass and just being outside. And I'm so glad that you're able to do that now.
Yeah. Yeah. Very kind volunteers have come to give me a shove. And luckily, we have places that are close enough you can go there and just sit and have a Coke or whatever, iced tea, and look out and relax on a summer afternoon before you come home.
Okay, wonderful.
Everything Southern summer should be.
Mm-hmm. Is it pretty hot up there?
Yeah.
Been in the 90s for most of the week, but we're cooling off a little bit for the weekend.
Boy, I would
and
so love
any sports
if we only had it in the 90s down here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys really have it.
We get triple digits down here. Okay, speaking of numbers, I'm going to go ahead and move on to our opening riff tonight, number 16.38. That's session 16, question 38. Questioner, the law of one is truly universal in creating a progression towards the eighth density in all galaxies. Is this correct? I am Ra. This is correct. There are infinite forms, infinite understandings, but the progression is one. 16.39. Questioner, I am assuming that it is not necessary for an individual to understand the law of one to go from the third to the fourth density. Is this correct? I am Ra. It is absolutely necessary that an entity consciously realize it does not understand in order for it to be harvestable. Understanding is not of this density.
Thank you, Monica. These paradoxical and confusing words are at the heart of the Law of One material, and they set it free from the boundaries that hold other material to finity. It is infinite, therefore it is nothing. It is everything, therefore it is nothing. You can work that equation either way. It comes out to the fact that in this illusion, we are an essence that is absolutely identifiable as us, that resonates at a certain mixture of vibrations that becomes clear enough that people of higher densities can know us, can feel our vibrations and know that we are we. This, however, is surrounded in third density by an unknown number of masks. And that's why the law of one is a law that is in which one of the younger understandings is that nothing can be understood completely. There's a humility there that is desperately needed. The word sophomore was made in the time of the Greek philosophers. It was considered quite something to go standing on the stoa in your toga and talk nonsense, you know, for an hour with Plato. It's sort of a combination of, you know, what guys did, you know, to be cool and what guys did to be different. Sort of like driving a four-horse carriage in mid-19th century England. It wasn't approved of. It was a waste of horses, but it was done. And philosophy was sort of considered like that. It was a leery eye was gazed on philosophy by many who were more practical than the philosophers were. But the philosophers truly loved to debate statements like this. How can we know anything? What is known? Matter of fact, teleology is a whole philosophy that is full of readings just on that subject. Well, in Ra's teleology, the answer is nothing can be known. Now, how does that help? It helps you from getting tied down to the dogma of what things are, and it causes you to look inward towards the essence of things. At a party, when someone says, hey, let me introduce my friend so-and-so. He's an engineer with Girdler Construction, you know. And you have a tag, you have something to follow, and you can say, oh, hello, I'm Carl Ruckert, and I write books. Oh, really? What are the books about? Oh, mostly metaphysics. The smile goes plastic, the eyes go blank. And I realize we are going to have to talk about engineering. But when you get into the law of one at first, one of the most rapid and quick mistakes you can make is out of love. It's always out of love that we do things. We love the law of one, and we seize on one part or another of the law of one that especially holds our interest. And we want to share it with people so much. And we want to say, hey, listen, this is really great. It gives you a much bigger barn for the things that you feel are good, and there's an organization there that organizes all those things that you've been holding in your hand that have been sort of shuffling around. Now here, you can put this here and that there. It's wonderful. It's a great philosophy. It helps, gives you ways to think. And that's what I think of the Law of One more than anything else. It is a marvelous conversation in which we are privileged to listen to a very high-minded and broad-minded gentleman who was undoubtedly off the charts as far as his IQ, talking with a higher-density human that wanted to communicate with us as best as they could. So the group worked very hard at communicating with Don, and he worked very hard at asking questions of them. And the result is this this sort of cloud, I guess you'd say, of wonderful sayings that can be condensed into and organized into a very good metaphysic or cosmological philosophy. But when you have this wonderful philosophy, and when you're reading more and you're getting more in and you're just opening up like a flower, you really want to share it with the people that love you and that you love. And let me tell you, nothing is more killing in a relationship than if you're trying to share something that the other person doesn't understand. It feels like you are criticizing them if they don't get it immediately. And a lot of times people don't get it immediately. That's okay. Everybody comes along at their own rate and at their own style. And it's true, there are infinite forms and infinite understandings. But the progression is one. It's a progression towards unity. So there isn't a road that doesn't lead into the unity of Rome in that trope. It's utter unity while we each remain individuals. And that is such a dynamic paradox that it will be talked about for a long, long time.
Okay, thank you. Did you have anything to add to that, Jim?
The only thing I would add is that I would say it's not so much a progression towards unity, but a realization that the unity already exists, and that what we have in our third density world of created things is an opportunity to discover that unity, and to discover that it already exists, it's always been, and it always will be, and that we are an integral portion of that unity, and it's a constant discovery of a bigger and bigger self until we finally discover we are the creator and we've always been the creator.
Okay, and I wanted to add just a quick comment. Whenever I've read that quote, I always thought of this friend that I met actually on the internet in another discussion forum many years ago, and I always give him as an example, as someone who, in my opinion, seems to have such a strong grasp of Law of One concepts, and yet he's never heard of the Law of One because he's in an organized religion. So when people are talking about living, you know, according to Law of One principles and understanding the Law of One and studying the Law of One and choosing the Law of One as a spiritual path, I always think of him and I give him as an example of someone who seems to just really be on that path, even though he may not realize it, and that the law of one's not a set of beliefs according to some religion or even according to these books. It's deeper than that. It's the concepts that are universal. And so I always thought of him. Okay, I'm going to go to our first question, which is from Zendunk from the Bring Forth Forum. And Zendunk asks, well, actually, Zendunk quotes Ra in session 48, question 10, and basically is just asking you to elaborate. So here's the quote. I am Ra. There's the question. Scroll up here. Okay, questioner, could you tell me how the various bodies, red through violet, are linked to the energy centers, red through violet? Are they linked in some ways? I am Ra. This shall be the last full query of this working. As we have noted, each of the true color densities has the seven energy centers, and each entity contains all of this in potentiation. The activation, while in yellow ray, a violet ray intelligent infinity is a passport to the next octave of experience. There are adepts who have penetrated many, many of the energy centers and several of the true colors. This must be done with utmost care while in the physical body, for as we noted when speaking of the dangers of linking red, orange, yellow circuitry with true color blue circuitry, the potential for disarrangement of the mind-body-spirit complex is great. However, the entity who penetrates the intelligent infinity is basically capable of walking the universe with unfettered tread.
Okay, let me get this started by saying that I think that this all has to do with fear and faith, or love and dislike. The lower chakras are the red, orange, and yellow ray chakras. You know, like Roy G. Biv in the balloon. You know, what are the colors of the? What am I trying to say, Jim?
The rainbow.
Yeah, the rainbow, and the colors of it are Roy G. Biv: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. So the first three are along our spine, are at the joining of the legs, in the pit of our stomach, and at the not the pit of our stomach first, but at our lower GI tract, then the pit of the stomach. Then you go into the heart ray, the green ray. You get up out of that part of the body that is designed to excrete things that are not wanted. And the part of the physical body that does that, and is also the part of the electrical body that does that for what we don't want. Speaking vibrationally, we don't want the bad vibrations or the wicked thoughts or whatever it is that we're looking to remove from ourselves. Those are the kinds of things that we look for. So these lower chakras, they're very important. They're just as good to have as the higher chakras, and you can't do higher chakra work without them. But if you do not have green ray love in the mix, you're working without being able to offer love to your response. You might be very clever, you might be very powerful, you might be very wise. But if you skip lighting up the heart chakra and resting in the open heart, the potential that you do is for evil, if you want to use that word, or for negatively polarized action. And it's the kind of thing that people do out of fear. Cookbook magic in general is something that people do out of fear, you know, wanting to control the environment that's before them. Let's see. So if the entity who penetrates an intelligent infinity is indeed not working with the heart chakra, but has leapt over it and doesn't see a point to loving others or being loved, then he's rejected the truth, the basic truth of the universe, because all is love. He can't get away from the fact that he was made of love, and everything that we see, all manifestation, is love made visible by light. So when the Confederation greets us in love and light, they're greeting us in the substance of all that there is. But what we see is the light. What we need to be working with is what we cannot see, the open heart. So I believe that is sort of a look into that material. Monica, Jim, you got any thoughts that further that?
You know, I would concur with what you had to say on that. That's a good summary.
What do you think Ra meant by the dangers of linking red, orange, yellow circuitry with true color blue circuitry?
Well, I think there's a potentiation there for evil, even if you don't know you're doing evil. If you're doing something for somebody else's good, and you know you believe that with all your heart, the truth of it is that you may well be acting in defiance of the other person's free will and infringing in some way that you'd see if you love the person.
Okay.
And as you mentioned before, leaving out the heart chakra there leaves out the basic truth of the universe, that it's made of love. And I think this question refers to a previous question where Ra was talking about how the negatively oriented entities skip the heart chakra and use the power of their will that they generate in the red, orange, and yellow lower chakras in order to make it the blue, which is the pathway that they would use then to ascend into a higher consciousness. But what they're doing by leaving out the love aspect is depending upon the strength of their own will, and they may or may not be strong enough to do what they hope to do. So there is a danger there in doing that particular way, and that's the risk that the negatively oriented entity takes in order to gain more power and to get into the fourth density.
Yeah, and Ra said the potential of for disarrangement of the mind-body-spirit complex. That sounds pretty serious, and that's what happened to Hitler, right? That the entity basically was disarranged. And
I don't know, what did Ross say about that, Nick?
Well,
maybe I've got
interestingly
that.
Enough, he did not polarize enough in a negative sense in order to make graduation. He began to exist in what was called a dreamlike world in which he attempted to, he actually thought he was doing something that was good for his people. He thought he was being of service to others by being so negative in our point of view. So he was going to have to be taken to a plane of healing for some extended period of time because he had indeed disarranged his mind-body-spirit complex.
So the danger could be for someone who thinks they're polarizing STO and completely get taken off track and depolarized.
Right.
And or worse. So, wow. Okay, I would like to let everyone know that you are listening to In the Now with Carla L. Record and Jim McCarty, and if you'd like to join us on the air, please call 646-595-2294. We welcome questions. Call us live. We'd love to have you. 646-595-2294. Be sure and press the 1 key. The next question from Storm Shadow. Now, this is slightly condensed. Storm Shadow thanks you, Carla, for your service. Storm Shadow says, I find that as I grow, I discover more and more that those limitations in my experience, education, social skill, physical health mostly, that I previously thought were due to shortcomings in my character are attributable to my family's economic and psychological condition growing up. Now, as someone who's very concerned with his own spiritual evolution, I don't want to get caught in the trap of blaming everything on others or even on some external condition. But I can't, in all honesty, find the root causes for these things within myself, unless I go all the way back to pre-incarnative choices, that catch-all for everything I can't otherwise explain. I'm a smart person. I have, or at the very least had, the ability to learn quickly and a persistent desire to do so. But looking back, I can see an almost extravagant array of opportunities to satisfy my hunger for information that were either refused or kept from me by my parents, bungled by inept or unconcerned authority figures, or rendered otherwise inaccessible by my depressed emotional state at the time. Now I watch others do the things that I believe I came here to do, and it tortures me that I cannot participate in the creation of or even take advantage of this new ocean of education that is as unavailable to me now due to lack of time as it was during my childhood due to lack of resources. So my question is this: to what possible purpose do you imagine I might choose this for myself? What reason could my higher self have for giving me a useful potential set of abilities and then placing me in situations where I'm prevented from developing them to the utmost or even at all? Is this life just a throwaway in regards to those things that I'm not actually meant to bring anything meaningful to the world, only sit back and watch as others with better upbringings and stable families do what I wish I could be doing? Am I teaching myself some rarefied variety of patience or endurance? Or perhaps this was a failure to self-program the incarnation effectively? I've given myself too many tools for the job and they're ending up distracting me from the real mission.
Okay. I realize that in a condensed show like this, it's difficult to stretch out and be spacious about something. But I do think that perhaps I can just make it personal to me. And if you don't mind, Jim, to you, and just run through a couple of beginnings and then what happened to us. I was in my youth, I mean really young, I was considered a good performer, had a couple of offers to work on Broadway as a child, and I was a dancer. Again, I was it was felt that I could go far, and at one time I was a good piano player. I never became a dancer or a poet or any of the other scholarly things that I was told I'd be good at. And most especially, I never became a singer. I came very close on that one, even ascending to Peter, Paul, and Mary's manager offering me a copy of a contract so that my singing partner and I could open for Peter, Paul, and Mary on the road. And we were eminently ready. We had 60 songs of our own ready to go that people hadn't heard yet, and they were all either completely original or I'd taken some 18th century Irish poem and we put it to music. So Jim, on the other hand, grew up in small town Nebraska. He grew up reading for his team, and he was a stellar athlete. He went to college and got interested in business, and then he decided no, business wasn't it, and he took sociology, and then he decided, well, maybe I ought to put my money where my mouth is, and so he went into grade school teaching. And at the age of 25, he retired and went and lived on his land and was part of the Back to the Land movement of the 70s. And so I ran into Don with the meditation group. It was completely unusual that he would ask me to join because he didn't like women. So it was like there were 12 guys and me in the original meditation group. And I didn't want to channel at the time, and I didn't channel for 12 years. I didn't channel until 74. And again, it was completely because Don asked me that I got into it. And it's the same with Jim. I asked Jim to learn it in 1980, and he did. He worked at it for quite a while and is a very good channel, although it's hard to get him to channel now. Now, all of this is prior to saying, do you feel that Gemini are misplaced in the world? Do you feel that we have somehow failed because we have all this extra stuff? I like to get back to a spacious point, looking at myself anyway, and trying to see how the dancing of my nature is coming out. You know, my ability to feel and see rhythms. How about my performance ability? Well, you know, it is used. It's not used in a way that performers normally use it, but I do enjoy working with a crowd of people to share love back and forth. What about the piano playing? What about the you know, you could go on and on, and then you just have to see, well, parallel to that skill and something that I do use in my life is, and then find that where that is. And you'll probably find that, yeah, you can think of ways in which you are using your skills, but they are just not on the outside. They're more on the inner planes, that you sort of absorb those into yourself. But I don't think that they are without use. Jim, you want to add to that, Monica?
Go ahead, Jim.
Wait, Monica.
After you.
Okay. Well, I would say only that one of the things that struck me most about the Ra contact is when Ra would say there are no mistakes. And I think in our case, and probably in the case of the questioner here, all of those talents and abilities are there to be used in some way, maybe not purely as a dancer or a musician or whatever, but you need to look at where it is you are and what possibilities have presented themselves, so that, in other words, bloom where you are, where you're growing. Take those opportunities that are there and go with them, run with them, and you'll probably find yourself using some aspect of all of these abilities that you've brought with you, and you thought you'd be pursuing one of them or two of them maybe in a purer way. But there is a way in which to express all of those attributes that you have with you, those talents, in the situation that you find yourself in, your daily round of activities. So we just need to look at what has presented itself as a possibility for us, and then get into it, go with it, go with the flow, I guess is the old saying from back in the 60s.
Well, I would just add to that my own, just a real super quick experience. When I was in seventh grade, I was painfully shy, extremely shy, but I was an artist. I was always constantly drawing, and I just knew that I was going to grow up and be an artist. Well, I got stuck in a speech and drama class by accident because the art class was full, and I was terrified when I gave my first speech, but it changed my life completely, and speaking skills that I got out of those classes, those years in speech and drama, which was several years actually, because I ended up enjoying it very much. At the time, I actually thought, oh, I'm going to be an actress. But of course, you know, I'm 4'11". I don't think so. You know, that pretty much ruled that out. But those skills that I did get ended up coming, you know, being put to use in my business, because I give presentations and, you know, conference calls and things like that. And now I'm doing the show with Carl and Jim. So, my God, this is way beyond what I ever imagined. So, I feel so honored to be hosting the show with Carl and Jim. So look at how your skills and your skill set can be put to use in things you never even dreamed of. So I would just say trust in life and just, you know, like Jim said, bloom where you're planted, and it'll all be put to use at some point, or something else will come out of you that you didn't know you had. So, okay, I'm going to go on to our next question, which is from You and I Are One. I love that name. I had to look at that a few times before I realized, oh, that's what it's spelled. U-N-I-R and the number one. You and I Are One. I would like to ask a question, hoping they are asked to one of the entities of the Confederation during the meditative sessions. Okay,
he's not going to be unhappy with us. There's no question about it. sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you and I.
I'm gonna go ahead and read it. And I have read that during a ritual, if an individual is doing something which is not allowed or a task which is not given to him or her, the said individual will suffer. It is also stated in the reading material that such a thing applies to daily life and one may notice it. Here is my question. How does one know what is allowed and what is not? Does it pertain to the path one has chosen or perhaps the goal of this density? Finally, are the answers to these questions useful in developing polarity, self-awareness, or something else altogether? Now, there's a part two to this question. I'm going to go ahead and read it, and then I'm not sure if it's related or not. When a human experiences certain emotions, I assume they are susceptible to manipulation, not only by our own kind, but also by beings of higher densities. Is this true? If it is, how may one be advised beforehand of incoming manipulation? Does awareness of the self terminate the manipulation, or must one open the heart to be unswayed? And we sometimes consider those beings which are negatively oriented as evil. Does such labeling truly make them more than what they are? Or rather, are we basically potentially dooming ourselves if we perceive them as manipulative due to the very power of our thoughts?
Okay. Well, let's start at the beginning and just chew through here. In the first place, about rituals, it is true that a ritual suffers if something that's not in the ritual happens or if somebody leaves in the middle of a ritual. What is allowed and what is not allowed has nothing to do with normal right and wrong. It has to do with what's in the ritual. If the ritual goes a certain way and everybody's performing a certain task, visualizing a certain visualization, saying certain words and everything, if a person says something different, it's like, you know, if you wove a wrong pattern into your basket and then you're going, oh, it's a rabbit, what the heck is that? And, you know, that hurts you in the metaphysical world that you, where you're winding this pattern. You're looming this pattern. That's what the ritual is looming a pattern for the creator. And so you do want to be absolutely impeccable in the way you do that. If one isn't aware even of what is asked in a ritual, then, you know, ignorance is bliss. You shouldn't be fooling with it, because you might get it right by mistake and then you wouldn't know what to do with the power that you've raised. When one does something that is not allowed or a task which is not given, does that pertain to the path one has chosen? I do not know, actually. I have never figured out why people would get into a ritual situation and then choose to defy the way it's done. So I don't have the answer to that question. All right. But it is important to realize that your identity while you're doing a ritual is in your knowledge of yourself. You know who you are. You know what you follow. You know what your ethic is. And that is your speakingness in other densities, and that people recognize that vibration. So if you want to pass a test in the metaphysical world, you just get a good night's sleep and know who you are. Now, you are susceptible to manipulation. Anybody is. If we're not wise enough or clever enough to see the con that's going on, we might get caught. And that's no shame to us. We just are naive or innocent, and they're more clever than we'll ever be. This happens a lot. And I identify with the non-clever goofball that... I think that what you have to do when you're looking at possible manipulation is just ask yourself if you feel manipulated. And if you do, then in some way, shape, or form, you are being manipulated. So try to track that down. And when you get as clear in your mind as you possibly can, then go talk to the person with whom this is happening and see if you can get it resolved. Jim, do you have something to add to this about the what you and I are one asks about what is allowed and what is not allowed?
Well, I would agree with what you said about the rituals. If the ritual is understood, I also could not grasp why somebody would not want to do exactly as it is described, because it's like everybody, say a car is stuck, you're trying to get it out, you have four or five people, and you're all pushing the same direction to get the car out, and somebody decides to push against, you know, it doesn't make sense. So, you know, in order for the group to succeed, everybody needs to work together and to be of one mind and one effort. So if you go against the ritual and the way it's practiced, then you can expect, you know, some sort of difficulty.
And, you know, Jim, you could really, I mean, we can talk because of being married for a long time, and Monica can too. She's got a long-time marriage partner, about how you do, in marriage, you create little rituals. And they may be even silly rituals, but they're rituals that give you pleasure or peace or make you feel safe with each other. Maybe you call each other a funny little name. I don't know. Maybe you ask your questions in a certain manner. But there are ways that we have of bouncing information back and forth that have taken on the feeling of a ritual. Like, for instance, Jim, when I start my morning laps and I'm going into my exercise, and you say, "And now we're off." And if you didn't say that, I would miss it terribly, you know, because that's the way we begin what happens to be a fairly difficult, protocol of rituals and cleansing rituals and exercise rituals and so forth. So there's that, too, that things that don't on the outside look necessarily ritualistic or magical can be made both of those things. And then if the partner's involved, if one of them through lack of understanding or through anger tries to break one of those beautiful silver cords of light that are binding us, then that is indeed a danger.
I think that in everything that we do, there's a ritual, or you could call it a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
there are levels to this dance. Maybe it's, like you say, makes us feel safe, or maybe it makes us feel efficient at what we're doing and getting it done well, or maybe it makes us feel creative and expressive of the inner joy, makes us feel happy. Makes us feel like we're almost like speaking a language and conversing at higher and higher levels. I think when we interact with each other, it's just natural to do this kind of a dance, because really everything we do is a dance. It has a rhythm to it. It has a center to it. And it has a way of helping us to express and to be of service and to rejoice and to feel unity. It's just a way of all kinds of creative energies to come through us, to have these rituals and dances and languages that we speak with each other.
It is a wonderful world. And when you get beneath the surface of this smooth pond of silly politics and stupid famous people that say silly words, and you get into the magical deep mind, it is an explosion of integrity and pleasure and enjoyment to find that part of the mind that, you know, hasn't been sullied by the surface smog and scum of the matrix, I guess you'd say, and, you know, moves with a heavier tread because it has the rhythm of the deep sea and the rhythm of deep knowledge.
Okay, thank you both. We have time for just one more question, and I'm going to go to Om Casey's question. and it's rather long, and since we've got about 15 minutes left, I think we'll be able to cover it, but I'm going to go ahead and read a little fast and maybe condense it just a little bit just so I can get the question asked. Okay, it's regarding the idea of a fourth choice, along with the idea of 1, not choosing to polarize, 2, choosing service to others, 3, choosing service to self. What about an option 4, choosing to make a leap beyond the densities of polarization directly into unity? Om Casey says, I have heard Carlos speak of, at the moment of death, walking the steps of light, stopping where it feels most comfortable. But what is the Ra group's insight into awakening, ascending in this lifetime, prior to and in lieu of any death scenario? Do they speak of this fourth option in what they share? It certainly does feel to me far more central and imperative to focus on improving the quality of my consciousness through entropy fear reduction, a natural byproduct of which is clearly a service to all. Would this fourth choice be valid? Now, this was a discussion, and they offered this as a discussion for the radio show. Austin contributed this. To my knowledge, Ra doesn't talk specifically about bypassing polarity completely. They don't mention this possibility and indeed make it seem like polarity is simply an aspect of third density existence to be worked out, as it gives us the ability to evolve our consciousness. What you feel as a pull towards unity and absence of polarity could possibly be your own home density pulling you upwards from third density. It also makes me ponder the idea of service to others polarity persisting in philosophy and balance through sixth density. Could it be that service to others is only polarized because of the presence of service to self? Is choosing STO akin to attempting to shed all semblance of polarity to begin with? Ra says, as the density of unity is entered, the service to self path is abandoned, but service to others maintain their service. Maybe if you follow your passion, which you define as absent of polarity, it will lead you down a path which others may view as service to others. How it is defined is rather inconsequential.
I asked a question like that of Ra way back in the beginning of the contact, and I was concerned about going directly to the heart and being in that framework and environment of love. And I didn't really see why it would be necessary for me to work my way up through the lower chakras. And basically what Ra had to say was that there needs to be a foundation laid first before you put the roof on the house. If you look at what we're doing as building a house, we can't go directly to putting the roof up because there's nothing to hang it on. We have to build first from the ground up. And it begins with, as Ra said, an architrave, which turns out to be a foundation. And then there are walls, and then there's the ceiling, and then we, you know, eventually get to the framing of the roof and so forth. So I think the idea of wanting to get there and bypass all of the other stuff is, you know, commendable because it shows a great deal of intention and desire, but it's probably not workable. And we probably would discover that if we attempt it. And, you know, there's plenty of time, as Ross said, there's an infinite amount of time for us to make our choices and to do this work. So I would suggest that we really do need to go in a step-by-step pattern, because that's the way that we build it firmly and avoid what we were talking about at the first part of the program of leaping from red, orange, yellow to blue without, you know, covering the green as well. We have to take our steps seriatim, as Ross said, or in order.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I'm a person who likes to rehearse and to get it right and to get all of the weirdness is out before opening day. And I think that you can look at yourself as a leading actor in a passion play. And every day of your life, you know, you're on stage. And, you know, people have written about that one. And I don't want to dim William Shakespeare's fame. I won't even try to quote him on the stages of life. But more to Jethro Tull's idea of the passion play of life, that you know, all of our loves and our great desires and our deeply felt emotions and our most virulent hatreds and all of these things which either ennoble us and enable us for service or cut us off from our fellow human beings. All of these things lie there waiting to be grasped. But I think that the idea of a fourth insight, I mean, a fourth way to go, of leaping beyond, this gets into the very beginnings of my studies, I guess you'd say, of the emotions or studies of who we are. And I can remember sitting in my crib, looking out in between the bars of my crib, and doing the best I could to visualize infinity, a little bitty baby. And I would say, can you think about infinity? And my mother would sort of, well, no. You know, and I'd be thinking about it, and I pondered this for years. I mean, you'd think about infinity as this, but then it has to go further than that because it's infinite. So visualizing it becomes quite impossible. And to me, that's always been kind of a, I hold that dear to my heart, that little bit of knowledge that, you know, you can't even hold on to one thing because it's unknowable. We are, at the same time, we can be known to ourselves and then unknowable as the Creator itself is unknowable. So the hunger for leaping ahead, as Jim said, is a self-defeating one because the basics of any profession are usually very repetitive and very simple and extend in a can be made to extend by the teacher into a fairly coherent rule of, okay, this works this way, that works that way, and you do this so that you can do this and that. The human being is a complicated being and is only partially at the beck and call of the being itself. You can make yourself think certain ways and do certain things, but everybody's got their lines. So I think it's an unwise hope to leap beyond, to try to get free from, to shake off the shackles. These ways of being, these ways of being that seem to be shackles upon us, are actually those things that are helping us grow beyond that sense of being shackled. But here we're learning the basics. We're learning to develop our will and to use our will to get beyond what we know as the will is self-defeating. How are we doing, Monica? Is it time for me to quit?
No, actually, you have just a few minutes left. We got about 5 minutes left.
Okay, well, does anybody have anything else they want to say?
No. Not I.
Not I.
I just think it's really important to realize that it doesn't matter what we knew before. It doesn't matter how incredibly wise we were or how incredibly loving. We came here to third density because we wanted to serve in this density. So it's not that we come to a high hill, and standing on that high hill, we approach the masses, and we address them with our wonderful words, and the masses are enlightened by our most enlightened selves. You know, it's more like, well, one thing is very interesting about, I think it was Plato's first book of conversations. And he says, it starts out this way, I went down to the marketplace. And I always noted that after I read it the first time. I went down to the marketplace. He doesn't climb up on a hill to talk. He gets into the nitty-gritty of it and talks with the people around him that may or may not know anything. But he's ready to engage outside of himself in a conversation instead of depending completely on those thoughts within himself. And I think this is extremely healthy. I think you have to take metaphysics with a very light touch. If you take it extremely seriously, you're setting yourself up for mental dysfunction because there are so many things that remain unknown, and you can knock at some doors forever and not be let in because those doors just aren't there. They look like they're there, but, you know, some things are beyond words. Some things are beyond words. And once you learn that, that's the basic theme of this program, I guess, is not knowing is essential to being human. We need at some point to rest in our faith and to know that no matter what it looks like, this is a good life. We are good people. We will serve our Creator and those about us as we can, and we will feel blessed for doing so. Is it wrong to try to reach extravagantly? No, it's not wrong. It's more like it's not useful. So good luck if you want to reach beyond. But usually in reaching beyond, you will miss something that is central to having a clarifying, unifying, deep experience. I think it's much better if you memorize the things that need to be memorized, visualize the things that need to be visualized. Put in your time as a rookie magician. Learn how to control yourself, how to control your emotions. This is the work of a lifetime. So that you have yourself much more under control, and you have that ability to create spaciousness around a situation. That's so important when you're looking at things. Don't just jump and be wise. Sit and watch and wait, and when you see how energy can be balanced, see if you can just flow in like the tide with it, move that energy around, and then float on out. Let's see, 57 I've got. Is it time for me to say goodnight?
Now it is.
Okay. Well, listen, guys, I just really have enjoyed it tonight. Thank you for having me, Monica.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you too, Jim. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit the two websites, llresearch.org, which is the archive website home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, and the Law of One material, and bringforth.org, bring the number 4th.org, LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, and chat rooms. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla before the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org and go to the miscellaneous section and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. We will be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. That will be June 29th. See you then.